Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. I don't know. I think that music might be a little too upbeat for the news that we have today. Bennett Wakenight, the producer of the Business Lunch program. John Najarian, and of course, one of the co-hosts of the Halftime Report on CNBC. And you can follow him on Twitter at John Najarian, is on a phone line as he is most Tuesdays. I don't know. You feeling kind of down, John? Or are you feeling happier? What's going on here?
Well, I'm never all happy being the guy in the markets when the markets are down triple digits. That's the Dow, of course, not the S&P. But at least I'm overseas. I'm over in Milan and enjoying a lot of good hospitality here in Italy.
I don't know how to tell you this, but the summit's over, John. It's time to come home.
I know. But then the market's down, so I didn't want to, Stephen.
Well, you know, when I woke up this morning and I heard this news about Amazon and Berkshire Hathaway and J.P. Morgan Chase forming their own healthcare company, I thought, wow, that's interesting. It'll be an idea coming from business that maybe could grow. And I see that the healthcare companies have been suffering on Wall Street. Is that what's leading to this drop today? And well, let's start with there. Is that at least contributing to this drop today?
It is contributing to it. You're exactly right. And one of the reasons is, of course, that it's a multi-trillion-dollar industry, the healthcare business. We knew that when President Obama was passing the Affordable Care Act through Congress and signing it into law, and we recognize it today as some business people get together and try to fix what is, by most of our assessments, a very broken system.
But isn't today's announcement a little exciting?
It is. It is for me. However, like I say, when you have a number of big companies like United Health, UNH is the symbol there, and you take a look at how much that stock is getting hit on this news, everybody more or less, I think, Stephen, expected Amazon to get involved in the pharmacy benefits manager, the PBM space, or one of those spaces. They didn't necessarily think that they might jump in and take over a significant, you know, people have measured it as much of a third of the U.S. economy is involved in healthcare. And so that's not going to be a negative thing for consumers, but it is a negative thing for stocks. And it's one of those reasons that when you and I talk about, well, the stock market and the economy aren't really the same thing. Homes are gangbusters.
Yeah.
Highest home sales in years and values. But the markets are down pretty hard. Nervousness over Goldman Sachs, which said that we're due for a correction any day now. And this announcement from Berkshire, Amazon, and the like.
I want to ask you one more about that. Is that a three?
Sure.
Is that a three-legged stool, or is Amazon the driver there? Berkshire provides the people, and JP the cash. Or I mean, because they're talking about not just insurance, right? A whole new healthcare company.
Yeah, they are, and I applaud them for that. I think it's about time. I know my friends, because I know the CEO at United Health. I know he's not having a good day.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think competition in the space has been something that's been lacking. Not necessarily at the United Health level, but I thought for years, Stephen, we should have immediately, if the president, President Obama, would have gone after making insurance viable across state lines for healthcare, the way it is for automobiles and so forth. I thought it would have been a brilliant first step. And when you make a first step, that's okay, because all of us are expecting the second or third or fourth step. When you all of a sudden just say, I'm gutting the system and I'm going to start over, that's when you have some of the disruptions that we've seen. So this is not me calling out President Obama. It's just saying I think that a consortium like the kind they've put together is some really smart people with really deep pockets that can address the problem, and hopefully none of us will be forced to buy it. But if it ends up being a good thing, we can all take advantage of it.
Well, look, when I the past few years now, I've been hanging out with you business types, and the one of the things you're always telling me is that innovation comes from the private sector. It doesn't come from government. So this, you know, could be a great example of that if they tap into something, three very big private companies doing something that would benefit us all. Okay, Apple's going to announce its earnings later in the week. There are reports today that they are cutting back production right on their iPhone 10 because people are actually buying more 8s than 10s. And now Bloomberg just came out with a story, I don't know what's elsewhere, that the U.S. is investigating Apple because of its updates that I know you know would actually slow down some older phones to incentivize us to buy the newer phones. I'm sure they're hoping things are pick up with their earnings report, but it's got all the makings of a rough week for Apple.
Yes, it does. And it's the biggest cap stock in the world until the Saudi oil production stock comes out later this year. But right now, Apple is the biggest capitalized stock in the world. And I think, Stephen, that a lot of folks, when they look at this, this is not me criticizing you.
That's okay.
But a lot of people do look at it and say, oh, they slowed down the phones in order for John and Stephen to say, boy, this damn thing's just not as fast as I need it to be. I got to upgrade. That would be a logical assessment. I don't think it's a truthful one. Allegedly, Apple did that because the batteries, as they age, and they've already addressed this by making, I think it's a $25 or $35 change if you want to go in there and exchange your old
battery. Right, right.
The older the battery gets, the slower it gets. Same thing's true with Tesla or any other rechargeable battery. The more you recharge them, the less time they have before they lose their power. Now, obviously, heat and cold obviously affect it as well, but Apple addressed this by slowing down certain functions on the phone to keep the batteries from burning out as quickly. And some people, in particular in the press, have said, well, that's because they're greedy capitalists and they're doing it to make us upgrade, which may be true, but that's a class action if indeed they've done that.
All right, it's
if they haven't done that, yeah, it's something else.
I was going to say, John, it's evening time, and I know I don't want to keep you from your tiramisu. So is there something you're watching on Wall Street today from overseas, a little tip for us?
Sure. Believe it or not, in the oil space, after a 2% sell-off today, Halliburton, HAL, it's one of the companies that goes out there and helps people drill and bring back crude oil and natural gas from various parts of the world because they truly are a global company. I like the action we're seeing in that stock today, so we were buying that on the dip. And overall, I think the market will be just fine. I think it's a little nervous ahead of President Trump's State of the Union address.
John Najarian, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you, Stephen.
It's 12:23. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, you got an idea for a business, right? Well, you got to sit down. First thing you got to do is you got to come up with a business plan. That's what everyone tells us. And write out the business plan, then follow the plan, and then with any luck, success will be yours. That is not the advice of our next guest. Carl Schramm has written a book called Burn the Business Plan. He teaches at Syracuse University. He's one of the guys who came up with the Global Entrepreneurship Week. And he joins us now on the phone line. Carl, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hey, I'm glad to be with you.
Let's just start with the idea that you say entrepreneurship is misunderstood with what you see in the media or what you might see in business books, things like that, that we don't quite get a sense of what true entrepreneurship is. What do you mean by that?
Well, this is based on my having been president of the Kauffman Foundation for 10 years and having watched endless numbers of professors telling people that they have to write business plans to start businesses. And, you know, data just don't tell us that. All the big companies in America, including many of the new ones, like Apple, for example, or Facebook, their entrepreneurs never wrote business plans. It's not how businesses start. So So this book, Burn the Business Plan, is basically meant as practical advice to people who are thinking about becoming entrepreneurs and how you go about it. You don't start with writing a 60-page essay.
You know, I used to interview a lot of writers, and one of the questions I used to ask of them is whether there are great writers out there who are undiscovered, who have a book in them and they sort of never let it out. And I suppose the same question could be applied to entrepreneurs. I mean, are there people out there sitting with ideas that might change our world, but they don't sort of have the initiative or been presented with or made the opportunity really to bring it out?
Well, that's a wonderful question, and I'll tell you why. Because in my book, again, my book is based on a lot of statistics and studies that I did over 10 years, and it's different from a lot of case study type books. So in my book, I basically discover and give all the data that shows that the average person starts a business when they're 39.
Right.
And I'm sure your listeners have this vision that's been pumped at us, you know, through the media, you know, through a lot of magazines, certainly by professors who teach kids who are 20. That, you know, entrepreneurs are kids. And for the most part, that's totally wrong.
You also say that entrepreneurs,
businesses.
You say entrepreneurs come out of corporate America, that corporate America is a good place to start.
It's the best place to start.
Why,
you know,
why is that?
Somebody, well, because if you take a job and the average entrepreneur has worked for another company more than 10 years, these are folks, again, who are like 39. And what they've learned, and, you know, you've asked this question, is there an entrepreneur inside me? Most entrepreneurs learn that because they work someplace and they have an idea. The idea came to them because they actually had their hands on an industry. And that's where they discovered that there was something that could be done better or faster or cheaper, or there was a new product that the company didn't see. And that's where their ideas for a business came from.
That's Carl Schramm.
That's the more typical route.
The name of Carl's book is Burn the Business Plan. All right, one more. You know, we're proud here in Chicago of 1871, the incubator. There are several here. And you argue, right?
I've been to 1871.
Yeah, you've mm-hmm. been to 1871?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Are they going to have you back because you say incubators aren't so good?
Well, Kevin, who was actually the founder of that, he's a very, very smart guy. And the good news about Chicago is it's a big enough town that there are actually probably good companies going into that incubator, or entrepreneurs
sure.
going into that incubator. But on balance, incubators are not the places where businesses start.
They start elsewhere, corporate coffee break room or someplace like that. Carl Schramm, Burn the Business
Precisely.
Plan. Enjoy Syracuse, will you? I hope you're having as mild a winter as we are.
It's a brutal winter up here.
it's not been mild here, I have to say, but we haven't had a lot of snow, and I know you guys have. So, listen, thanks for joining us today. I truly appreciate it. Hope we can talk again soon.
Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks very much, Kim Gordon, Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. Kim, I noticed a little hitch in your voice. You feel okay? You have a cold? You going to the doctor anytime
soon? It's going around, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. Well, I just, you know, I have someone
Thank
here.
Thank you for caring.
I have someone here who might be able to help you.
I might need it.
In the studio, Terry Dreher is here. She's the CEO of Ensure Patient Advocates. And, well, this is kind of a catch-up because I talked to Terry a couple years, maybe more ago, and so I thought she would be coming back around and we'd just see how the business was going. Terry, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
All right, how long ago did we talk?
It has to be between a year and a half and 2 years,
right.
I think.
And I read that your business was up 118% last year?
Yes.
Now, how much of that do you think is because you were on the show with me? Probably quite a bit.
I have no idea, but I do know a lot of people reached out to me after my last time.
Well, let's go
here.
With 67%.
Okay.
I'll take credit for 67. Ensure Patient Advocates is a great idea, I think, and one that I think a lot of us will run into, if not now, soon. So explain for me what you do.
Okay, well, it's a fairly new industry. I guess the national organizations started in 2008, 2009, and because we're having so many different kinds of problems with U.S. healthcare right now, I think it's an industry that's really taking off for several reasons. Social reasons, political reasons. A lot of people just don't even know the right questions to ask.
It's interesting you come in on a day when Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and Chase announced this giant new healthcare company,
mm-hmm.
which I'm hopeful about. I mean, I think it'd be mm-hmm. great if they could figure out a way to rip through things and deliver health care in a more economical. What do you make of that news?
Well, I think the trend in America right now is to go bigger, bigger, bigger. Because if you don't grow, you're not going to make it. A lot of the smaller hospital systems have gone out of business, mm-hmm. and the smaller independent physicians are not able to compete with the big accountable care organizations. So it doesn't surprise me too much. I hope they have some really good ideas.
So I diverted here and I got a little ahead of myself. So your business is you are a registered nurse.
Yes.
You have other registered nurses working for you. And
yes.
You go to the doctor with us.
Wherever they want us to go. Sometimes they call us from intensive care units of big hospitals. Sometimes adult children call us when they're pulling their hair out over their parents. Probably our sweet spot, the people that we are most happy working with, are senior orphans, mm-hmm. people that simply don't have any family in the Chicago area, or they have kids on the other side of the country who can't drop everything every week or two to fly home and help them.
And you go to doctor's appointments, mm-hmm. and so how does that work? What's the benefit of having you there?
Well, the American Medical Association came out recently and said that everybody, absolutely everybody in America needs a healthcare advocate. Now, most healthcare advocates are family members, and they don't necessarily come with a background in healthcare, but for people that have nobody, no doctor, no nurse in the family to help interpret everything or even know the right questions to ask, it's very beneficial. And I've found that physicians really like knowing that an right. RN patient advocate is on the case.
Well, it's because they're hearing a bit more objectively,
mm-hmm.
right? When I'm sitting and talking to a doctor and he's telling me these things, you know, I almost want to be agreeable or want to imply that I understand when maybe I don't really understand everything.
Right, right. And we save the doctor's time because we can talk in medical language, keep the focus on the patient, and then go outside the doctor's office and sit down for a half hour interpreting, writing down questions, finding out what they want us to do next. So we work on the patient and the family's behalf.
Do you consider yourself a caregiver? I mean, it seems
no.
like you don't.
No. No, we're consultants only. Even though all of my nurses do have their own professional liability insurance, we do not do hands-on care. But
That was a bad word. I shouldn't mm-hmm. have said caregiver because maybe nurturer is a better word. I mean, it almost seems like
yes.
you are more than just a mm-hmm. daughter-in-law going
right.
to an appointment. You know what I mean? You must provide some comfort as well, just by your presence, maybe.
We absolutely do. One of the things that we see so often that's really heartbreaking is that seniors and their children are fighting. The seniors want to keep independence. The adult children are very concerned about safety, and they don't even know how to be objective. So there's a lot of fighting going on. So sometimes we can go in and help just lower the anxiety level, give people choices based upon their financial resources.
Do you ever challenge the advice of a doctor?
Sometimes. I have in the past, definitely.
Give me an example of that.
Okay, about 3 months ago, I took one of my longtime dear favorite patients to the hospital, and he had been the victim of medical error. We went to the hospital because he was short of breath. He needed a blood transfusion. But this particular doctor felt that he didn't really deserve a lot of care because he had a do not resuscitate order.
Mm.
And he was young, and he had been very firm with the doctor that he did not want to be resuscitated, but the blood transfusion was for comfort. So I definitely stood up for the patient's rights and asked all the tough questions. I even talked to the head of the emergency department.
So that's the doctor's office. What about when it comes to finding a place for an elderly relative to live, whether it's subsidized housing or you know, assisted living or things like that? Is that stuff you do as well?
Absolutely. I've spent the last 6.5 years finding out where the best and worst places are, and there are a lot of really bad places out there. And I feel
how hard is it to get into good places?
Well, it depends on how much money you have.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunately one of the realities of modern healthcare. The people with the most money get the wider range of choices.
All right, talk to me about this. This is a business show.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you're expanding.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see for? Because it seems to me like, you know, you're Jed Clampett. You just shot into an oil well here, or you know, you're gushing oil here. What's the future look like?
Well, I see the future very bright for our company. We definitely have the edge because we're all advanced practice nurses, and we know we're street smart, we're savvy, we're nice, we know how to work with hospitals. And I think U.S. healthcare is not going to get untangled for quite a few years. So we're there to make a difference, one patient, one family at a time.
Do you see a time when your practice is typical? When most people have someone like you?
It's the fastest growing nursing profession right now, and I think it's growing so quickly because people are really frustrated.
Terry Dreher is the CEO of NSure Patient Advocates. How do people find you?
They just mostly Google Patient Advocate in the Chicago area. Our website is www.NorthshoreRN.com, and they can reach out either through the website or call me, and we give 30-minute free consultations.
And you're not affiliated. You're not a North Shore.
Absolutely not.
And so you're not focused on the North Shore. You're focused on the entire area.
Yes, all around Chicagoland. We have nurses all the way from Naperville up to the Wisconsin border and the western suburbs.
Well, it's nice to see you again, and I'm happy to hear about your success. And
Thank you.
And I'm happy to help. I was able to contribute that 67%, really, because it's not a small
thing. Thank you so much, Steve.
Thanks very much, Shorian Samuelson, Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch, 12:52 on this sunny Tuesday afternoon as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio. Kelly Leonard is here. Usually when Kelly comes by, he's just dropped a podcast, Getting to Yes And at WGNRadio.com and elsewhere. Kelly, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Am I correct?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what, man? We missed one, too. I forgot. You talked to Michael Lewis.
I talked to Michael Lewis.
Well, I really like talking to Michael Lewis.
Yeah.
What a great conversation that is.
Yeah, we talked about his new book, The Undoing Project, which is kind of all that behavioral science that I've talked about.
Right.
These are the guys who sort of found it. So that was really cool.
Oh, so there I am publicizing the wrong podcast.
Yeah, but that's all right. They can go back.
I love Michael Lewis, and it's still there online, I'm sure. Kristen Hadid is the CEO of Student Made, out with a book, Permission to Screw Up, How I Learned to Lead by Doing Almost Everything Wrong.
Yeah, so this is one of those great leadership books that is pretty much all the stories of her failures.
Yeah.
So.
I personally, if I can, you know, be a little, revelatory, I think I would have been so much stronger had I been willing to fail more.
Right.
You know, and I think being so afraid to fail sometimes really holds people back.
Yeah, and by the way,
that's why I do this show, so I can prove that I can fail at this
constantly in public.
Right, and then yeah, I'm going to move on. Wait till you see what's next.
Yeah, that's the whole deal at Second City, right? Yeah. Failing in public. The deal is, you know, you don't learn from your successes; you generally learn from your failures. And Kristen, her great opening story. So, Student Made was a company that she founded when she was going to school in Florida, and her first big gig was being hired to clean out the college apartments before the kids were going to come in. So this is the apartments that were all, you know, occupied by summer school students.
So they festered all summer.
Oh, they were so gross. And
right. This
was the deal. She had to hire like 100, you know, workers to come in and clean these apartments while she stayed in the air-conditioned office with her feet up. And the first chapter is called The 45. And that is referencing the 45 people who quit on the very first day that she had this gig. And they had to do this like in 3 days. So her kind of comeback story was getting everyone to come and say, like, come for pizza in my apartment. Let me just talk to you. And she basically apologized, said she didn't know what she was doing, but she was going to come with them tomorrow and help them in every way. And pretty much, I think it was like 43 of them came back, and they managed to get those apartments clean.
So the idea, though, is you have to allow for your own failures and learn from your failures. But you also have to be... have the grace to accept others' failures.
Yeah, so permission to screw up for yourself and permission to screw up for the people who work for you. That's a big theme throughout. So she talks about her own screw-ups, but then the fact that she had to allow her best people to screw up so they learn from that.
Right. That takes some doing, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, it's not easy. And one funny thing about the book, too, is, you know, her workforce is all, you have to be a college student, so it's all millennials.
Right.
And she doesn't bash millennials. She does tell some pretty funny stories. So the two that came out to me were, one, on a number of occasions, parents would accompany their kids' students on their job interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So that was weird. And then she had one woman who, during the job interview, ate chicken McNuggets the whole time.
That is not a good move, Kelly.
That is not.
No.
So if you want to know
chicken cordon bleu, that would not be a good move.
Also not.
No,
no chicken during the interview.
No chicken. No food. Let's do no food at all.
No food.
Yeah. Okay. So, I'm not going to tell that story. Okay, I will tell the story. So, I'm not going to tell this story. One time, I one time called one of my kids' potential employers.
Yeah.
But it wasn't to help them. It was to
warn them?
No, it was to sort of bust my kids or check on my kid to make sure that they were really doing what they were supposed to be doing.
And?
I think I hung up early in the call.
You regretted the call?
I did. I never identified myself either.
So I got my son Nick, a job last summer working at Second City.
Well, you know, I'm hitting you up for that.
Me up for that. Yeah, everyone does. But that was you know, we were sort of like, is this a good idea or a bad idea? And, you know, ended up actually being a good idea.
Well, but I think connections, that's an interesting thing you bring up, because who was I talking to earlier this week? Oh, it was Jack Lavin at the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
Last week, maybe. And they were talking about how businesses they rely maybe too much on word of mouth in hiring.
Right.
And need to be a little more electronic or a little more scientific. But I think word of mouth works. I don't think there's anything wrong with a parent advocating for a kid to get an interview with someone they know, right?
Right. And tie it back to the Michael Lewis stuff. One of the things they talk about in the Undoing Project is there is a need for science and there is also a need for intuition.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the thing. Both things are true. With Billy Bean and the cybermetrics and all that stuff, they still have scouts. You know, so you kind of want to go with both. So in the case, and we know this, God, I think back to when I first wanted to get into theater, my dad basically called like Rock Chauffeur at the Goodman, Bernie Solins, who had just left Second City, and basically said, will you interview my kid? And that's all he did.
Right.
But if I hadn't had that, I wouldn't have got those interviews.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think there's something wrong with had your dad, who wouldn't have ever done this, you know,
put me on the air.
No, pressured someone to do it.
Yeah.
Look, you got to give this my kid a job and I'll do this.
Or literally like, you know, saying you're going to come and be on the air at WGN, you know, or like, because like that's not that runs into all kinds of trouble.
I think you want to put someone in the position to succeed or fail.
Right.
But they still have to do it on their own.
Yeah, absolutely. And this book is a lot about that. So Kristen, you know, she's a control freak. And she wanted to, you know, control every single part of every part of the job. And she couldn't do that and make her people better.
Name of the book is Permission to Screw Up, How I Learned to Lead by Doing Almost Everything Wrong. And you can listen to Kelly's conversation, Getting to Yes And, at WGNRadio.com.
It's up right now.
We'll talk soon.
Thanks, man.